Hello and welcome to the gaming podcast here on AV Forums. It's the month of November. I don't know where the year has gone. Fellas, we've got so much to talk about. Joining me this month, of course, is Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Steve.
How have you been?
Not too bad, can't complain.
Excited for new consoles?
Always excited for new consoles, always excited for new gadgets.
Also joining me is Leon. Hello, Leon.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Just like to confirm we are coming through at 1080p, for anybody who's wondered. We're not slumming it in 720. We're pushing the
not
full
upscaled.
Power of this podcast.
Yep. All good. And also joining me, hot from a pre-release little... Is it a show or event? How should we describe it? An Xbox One event in the centre of Leeds. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Also joining me is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Enthusing about Gravity off air earlier.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Should everyone go see it?
Everyone should go and see it immediately after the end of this podcast.
I'm going to go see it tomorrow.
I don't like the cinema, and I really, really hate 3D. But it's the first time I've ever sat in the cinema and thought, I see what people are saying now, you know, like the magic of cinema, what the point of sitting here with these other people and this huge screen is. And the 3D was great, and I've never even found it tolerable in the past. It was just one of the best kind of film experiences I've ever had. I mean, it doesn't make it the best film I've ever seen, but in terms of the way I felt about being there, it was just incredible. Incredible.
But space lends itself to that.
Absolutely,
perfectly,
yeah,
though,
of course.
Because you're not working on different planes. So you can just have something come straight towards the camera and at no point do you say, well, why in the hell is the camera there? You know, it just works perfectly. Plus you've got this kind of, you know, background to it and everything. No, that's... The only thing that puts me off is that there were long periods. It was kind of like silent for a lot of it.
There are periods of silence, yeah. There are.
Yeah.
But they use sound quite well because, you know, like space generally not amazing for yeah.
The acoustics are not so good.
They did, you know, it's one of those things where there were long parts of the films where in between just being like, wow, that's amazing, I just could not work out how any of it was done. I was just thinking, how does that even happen? And they play really well with light and dark, and they play really well with the sound and the silence. You've just got to see it, I think. It's not really... It's a difficult thing to describe because it is more about the experience than the content of the film itself.
Oh, you're making me want to go. I don't want to go to cinema. I hate cinemas.
Yeah,
I'm
so
into
do I.
Cinema.
That's what I'm forever. Saying. I hate cinemas. I hate 3D. I really don't like being very close to other people. And I had to do all of those things, and it was great.
We're managing to break a lot of the gamer stereotypes today. Cookie clicker, and I don't want to be around other people.
We're very sociable beings.
Oh, actually, there's one thing there is a bit of a claiming angle. Is this? I went to see it with a mate actually, and he made a really good point that there's quite a lot in it that feels like it's inspired by video games. And there's a sense of there's a few bits where it goes into a kind of first person perspective where it feels almost like you want to control it. That sense that you're kind of in control but slightly not in control. See what you think when you see it.
How long is it?
It's an hour and a half.
That's not bad.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's not long.
But no, I just hate, like Ben says, you know, I hate other people, and I like being a stereotypical black person shouting at the screen and saying, don't go in there, and stuff like that. You know, I just don't like the cinema experience. It's overpriced, and it's uncomfortable.
It is overpriced, I'll give it that, but I mean, I think it's my, that's how I want to see films, I think.
I can't sit in the same place for 3 hours without my ass going to sleep. And it ruins it for me. It does. It ruins, like, Dark Knight Rises, like, halfway through, I was like, this could be the best film on the planet, but all I want to do is get up and walk around right now.
Yeah. I think the worst thing about cinema for me is the fact that people were eating around you. I think if you could take that out of the equation, I think it would be a massively better experience for everyone.
The world's crunchiest nachos.
Well, that's the problem. Yeah. There was a bouncer saying, right, you look quite annoying, so you're not coming in. Are those Doritos? Are you planning to take them in? Nah, mate, sorry. Next.
Who sells crunchy snacks at a cinema? That's the thing.
Exactly.
True story, I was at a screening of Star Wars at my local cinema in Bluewater, and two guys got into a row before the movie even started. And one was so irate with the guy behind him that he took off his sweatshirt, flung it round his wrist and threw it at the guy and walked out.
Nice.
That is rage. To throw your own clothing at someone and leave it behind.
Yeah, that's pretty serious business. But I know, I see where it's coming from.
Steve, tell us how you got on.
Yeah, it was really good. The GameStar in the White Rose Centre in Leeds hosted the event. It was a decent evening. There was a few consoles there for have a play about with. They had.
Was it open to the public or invite only?
They just had a few spaces open, and they organised it via Twitter, and in the store you just dropped a tweet, or you let them know in the store that you were interested in coming. I think.
And you being the hot local games journalist, of course, well, you were exactly. Number one on there.
People flocked to see me. You know, I was signing autographs for 10 minutes before we got started. So, but yeah, it was. You know, sort of limited thing. You had to show your interest because obviously they only have like 5 consoles there. There was a fair crowd there, and we all had sort of like a round robin, taking it in turns on the consoles. There was FIFA 14, Rise, Dead Rising 3, and Forza. They were there, and like the gatekeepers, the Xbox gatekeepers were there to make sure that you didn't do anything you shouldn't have done, you know. Go on
do they call them the gatekeepers?
Not necessarily the gatekeepers, but they were there.
I'm imagining them with the Kinect heads.
No, well, funnily enough, the Kinects weren't actually, they weren't working. They were there, but they weren't working. And Rise was, they were having trouble with Rise to start with, and then it started just before before the thing opened up. But yeah, it was good. Had a few goes on Rise and Dead Rising because they're the games that I'm most interested in. But I had a few cheeky looks at other people playing Forza, not necessarily FIFA because I'm not bothered about that. FIFA looks the same, though. It looks just like a upgraded version. There's nothing much different.
No reinvention of the wheel there, that's for
no,
sure.
As we know that from the PS Vita version. I think it's going to be the same with the Xbox One version. But yeah, the other games that that were out there, they looked nice. The controller, actually, I was quite impressed with. It fits really nice in the hand now. It's, you know, they've changed it. The triggers probably will take a bit of getting used to because they've reshaped them. I think it's due to the vibration feedback on them now. But the controller is really nice in itself. You know, it fits nice. It's a nice weight.
Well, the triggers are still in the same place, right?
Yeah, they're in the same place, but they're not as narrow. They're a lot wider now. They're a lot more broad, right. The shoulder button, the triggers. So, it's the actual thumbsticks are a lot nicer as well. They're responsive, but they feel a bit lighter as well, so they're a lot nicer to use this time around. But yeah, I had a quick go on Dead Rising to start with, which was... It was a lot better than the other two. I mean, I've never got on with the Dead Rising games to start with. I didn't like the first
and the second
one.
It's still the only game which I feel tempted enough to buy the console. I'm not quite there yet, but that is a game I do want to play.
Yeah, that's the one that attracted me mainly, because obviously it's the exclusive one. And the actual... I thought the E3 trailer looked really interesting. A lot of people thought it was boring, but to me it looked a lot better than the older ones. The bit that I got to play in, it was in the in a town centre. It was in a bit of a shopping district, which is a bit familiar and probably a bit safe from Capcom, really, because obviously it comes from a shopping mall before. But everything seems to be sort of, you know, repeated from the previous two games. The crafting's there, the ridiculous amount of zombies on the screen's there, you know, creating weapons. I was running about with an electrified mallet at one point. I saw people driving about in bulldozers, JCBs, there was a flamethrower. You could pick up handbags and suitcases out of the shop windows and just fling them about. So it was, you know, to that end, it was, you know, just the same Dead Rising game. There wasn't a mission, there were actual mission to play. It was kind of like, you know, just have a bit of a mess about in it, really. But it handled really well, you know, the controls were nice. I felt the older games were a bit sort of stiff. The controls weren't as...
I think the first one was. I think that's a fair comment on the first one. The sequel, I think, kind of lost a bit of that and seemed to open up a bit more. But, yeah, I think people kind of know what to expect from a new Dead Rising game.
Yeah, it feels a lot better. The only thing I will say is it didn't look as pretty as I was expecting, but these weren't actual disc versions of the game. They weren't actually, you know, like sort of newer versions of the game. They were still like old sort of like preview copies, you know, right. They weren't actually running off a disc, so there's probably still a bit of polishing work going on behind the scenes until it's launched. But it did look nice, but not sort of, you know, the step up that you'd expect. So you could probably expect that to be running on a 360 and you wouldn't tell a difference, I wouldn't have thought.
Tell me about Rise. Is it one big quick time event, or has it actually got a little bit more substance to it?
The bit I played didn't have quick time events in it at all, really. the only ones that they did have is the big on the finishing moves now, do you know, the execution animations and right. ways in which you kill people. They're sort of controlled by quick time animations, but they don't have buttons appear. They've been clever in the way they've done it, because the buttons don't appear above people's heads, you know, the prompt. Instead, the person that you're going to execute, they're outlined in, you know, the colour of the button that you're required to press, so you don't necessarily feel like it's a quick time event, but it clearly is. But they're the only sections that I played which were quick time. Otherwise, it was a lot of free-flowing combat. You'd say something like, you know, Batman Arkham City, you know, sort of thing. You know, you were attacking, then you'd throw your shield to block, and then you'd sort of start attacking the next guy, then finish him off, then move on to the next one. So it was pretty free-flowing. That one, I was actually impressed by how well Rise looked. That looked more like a next-gen game than Dead Rising did. I thought the graphics on that were really good. Again, I didn't have a mission to play through. It was just the Colosseum mode, where you have to take down a few hordes of people and, you know, it's a bit where you have to prove your worth, basically, and kill a few sort of like gladiators and stuff. But I thought the combat handled really nicely. It looked nice. It wasn't a QT fest like the E3 trailer showed, which I'm quite happy with. But yeah, that's the same again. You know, it was, the controls were nice, you know, and everything, it handled nicely. So I was quite impressed, really.
You got an Xbox One pre-ordered?
Yeah, made sure tonight that it's coming for day one, so I'm getting the day one version, yeah, which I'm quite happy about. I'm looking forward to it more now than I was initially.
And what games did you go for release?
I'm going to get Rise, and I'll be reviewing Dead Rising when it comes out as well.
Right, Leon, what game did you go for with your release day console?
Better question is, what didn't I go for?
Really? Is it like that?
Well, I'm doing the whole digital thing, so I'm not actually buying any discs.
Right.
But I think the list stands at something like Call of Duty, Battlefield, Forza, Rise. What else is there?
That hard drive is going to fill up pretty quickly.
It is, yeah, it is. There's other stuff as well. Oh, it was Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed. Basically everything but golf, football, and there's one other I'm not getting either. Peggle 2 I'm getting though. Peggle's going
to
be awesome.
How do we all feel about this delay to Watch Dogs? I mean, was it a big shock or surprise to any of you guys? Do you think the way it seems to affect Ubisoft's share prices, well, I wasn't anticipating that. I mean, that looks really quite scary for those guys.
I think they should have predicted the sort of effect that GTA had on the industry a lot better than they have done, because I think you'd have to be silly to not assume that it's because of GTA. You know, I think there was rumours floating about it's because the multiplayer wasn't as good as they wanted it to be, but I think it's clearly that GTA made a massive splash and people are probably still playing it now, and I think it would have instantly been forgotten. And if you think Assassin's Creed were out at the same time as well, so I think it was the fact that we'll let Assassin's Creed have its time and then we'll release that further down the track when people have forgotten about GTA, they've played Assassin's Creed, then they can have their next open world game out in the market without anybody else really having a sort of similar game in the release calendar. So I think it should have been better planned, because it was inevitable that GTA was going to sell as many as it did.
News kind of broke literally a few days after we recorded our podcast, where Mark, you know, you were drawing attention to the fact that they hadn't really been that upfront with new content for the game, and you know, it kind of hinted possibly at the fact that it wasn't either A, very good, or B, ready.
I think there's certainly, yeah, an element to that. I also think perhaps they got word that the latest Assassin's Creed would be getting, should we say, more favourable a reception than previously they may have thought. Because it did seem almost like Assassin's Creed might be tailing off, and then they might be starting this new franchise. And the fact is that, you know, early word is that Black
it's
Flag,
doing well.
Yeah, looks to be a great kind of pirate sim and less of an open world, traditional free running game than a lot of people assumed. And so therefore, why cannibalise your own sales? You know, why risk one doing, you know, better than the other? When you could push one of those titles back to perhaps a new financial year, and then, you know, the stocks will rise then. So I think it's, you know, there was a lot of panic over nothing, and ultimately they should have a better game for it.
Do you not find it really amusing that every time someone talks about Assassin's Creed, the bad things are when it's the Assassin's Creed game? like the good stuff. Everyone's raving about everything which isn't Assassin's Creed, and they go, "Oh, it only gets a bit rubbish when you have to tail somebody, or listening to a conversation, or climb a building." But the pirate stuff—that's amazing. It's like, but that's not Assassin's Creed.
But that's brilliant, though. I think, can you imagine if they did that with Call of Duty?
No, true. And don't get me wrong, I'm back in, like, I'm buying Black Flag, and I'm looking quite forward to it, because if there's one series that needs to just change it up completely, Assassin's Creed's one of them. But I just find it really weird. I don't know, I think they should have just made a pirate game.
So the big story this past few weeks has been Resolution Gate. Mark, do you want to fill us in on this one? You've got an article coming up, I do believe.
Yeah, just trying to kind of delve into some of the console rage about it and the like, and what the possible reasons for it are. Basically, with the two big shooters coming out, Call of Duty Ghosts and Battlefield 4, everyone was wondering what resolutions they'd be running at. First off, there were lots of rumours that Battlefield 4 would be 720p on the Xbox One and 1080p on the PS4. That didn't quite turn out to be the case. It's 720 versus 900p. But unfortunately, after this EA event, where lots of members of the press were able to capture footage, lots of kind of screen grabs started coming out, and lots of footage that was a bit more questionable. And obviously, we're in full-on console wars territory, with lots of cherry-picked screenshot comparisons and people poring over images to try and see the differences. And really, it's such a kind of thorny issue as to say exactly why it is the case, and quite why people are getting so upset about it. I mean, from the specs, we basically knew that the PS4 would have the edge, but still, you know, people have got very, very upset about this.
Off air earlier, I kind of made myself a promise that I wasn't going to make this about PCs versus consoles, and I'm definitely not going to do that, because otherwise I think Leon might drive down here and clip me around the ear.
Careful. But,
as we got all of these new consoles coming out, it's always been sold to us that they were going to be superior graphics, you know, the kind of stuff that we'd been wanting for a long time, and clearly we're not going to be getting that. And I think it's so out of order that people are going to pay all this money for something which is really not too dissimilar to what we're leaving behind, apparently.
Am I
being knee-jerk?
Well, all I would say is, for anyone who's thinking that, go back and look at what Gun looked like on the Xbox 360. You know, it's really easy to forget that there was some pretty shoddy-looking early titles on this current generation, and I think that one of the problems is that obviously the majority of the PS4 titles are going to be in 1080p, but I think it just all points to the fact that Microsoft weren't ready for a 2013 launch. You know, time ultimately, I mean, is going to be the big factor. I mean, even if you consider the difference in power between them, when you've got kind of developers like Carmack and Shinji Mikami saying that basically they were very much comparable, and okay, kind of John Carmack's coming more from a perspective of, you know, he's building space rockets and he's used to seeing the kind of tech that he's playing about with the Oculus Rift. So to them, they would look incredibly similar, even though most console gamers are looking at these kind of differences between them. But time is going to be such a huge factor again. You know, as things go on, you know, no third parties are going to want to produce one really shoddy looking game and then one fantastic looking one. It ultimately, you know, budgets are flying out of, you know, all proportion with what they're getting back. And so I just think that you're going to see more convergence of quality. But yeah, I think you're right there, Steve. It's not quite the same leap, but it was never going to be the same leap, just because of the fact that, you know, we went to three dimensions and that seemed huge, and we've gone to analog control and we've, you know, populated screens with loads of NPCs and the like. And so we've really got to start looking at the underlying aspects of gameplay and physics and the like now.
I think it's just the lack of openness, I think, is my issue, because graphics don't just start and stop at resolution, you know, 1080p, 720p. There's a ton of other stuff which go into, you know, a beautifully rendered image. And that could be textures, that could be, you know, various degrees of sharpening or softening where appropriate. And if they just came out and said, look, you know, this is the hardware limitations of where we're at right now, and you know, there's going to be so much more added textures and other bits and bobs that the likes you've not seen before, then I think it would be a different story. But it almost felt like they were trying to not pull a fast one, but just, you know, be very very careful with what information they put out there.
Do you think they should have to do that, though? I mean, it's only because we're at the beginning of this new generation and that everybody wants to compare everything and justify their purchases for some reason that we're focusing on this so much. I get it. We want everything to be 1080p, but if you think about it, how many versions of these games are they doing? They're doing Call of Duty on, what, 6, 7 platforms this time around? It's just a matter of resources and time. And there's a lot of people out there saying things like Infinity Ward are lazy developers, that's in inverted commas, which I think is an awful thing to say, to be quite honest. I mean, these people like don't see their families for like God knows how many years making these things, and it's not exactly an easy job. And it's all right for everybody to be an armchair developer and say they should be able to do this and do that.
You make it sound like they're all locked in a basement.
Well, you know, when it comes to like crunch times, you hear those horrible stories and stuff. But and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to apologise for it. It is not awful that we're not going to have them at 1080p at launch and stuff.
No, exactly.
But I think it's just an unreasonable expectation when they've got so many different versions to do. They've got a time limit set to get it out. Like you say, every console generation has been like this. Why are we all surprised that the games look worse at the beginning than when they do at the end? That's how it always works.
Yeah, it's very true, very true.
But we've got immediate access to screenshots and the like. I mean, before, Christ, the pre-internet age, you'd wait for a magazine to come out. And then you just wait and you see which format they'd actually reviewed it on. Or sometimes they didn't even bother saying. And then you just didn't really find out until, you know, you actually played
it. You wouldn't know how well they've been photoshopped or whatever.
Compression on any kind of YouTube footage or anything like that. Christ, you'd never be able to tell. But now, you know, if you're playing something, you know, a YouTube clip of, you know, 1440p or something, and then, you know, you're able to blow it up to a decent size and get a reasonable idea of what you're getting.
But like I was saying, it's only the one aspect. You know, the story continues to evolve. Now we've got reports of frame rate issues on the PC for Call of Duty and PS4. They're saying that 60 FPS that we all love, that we all love the feel of it. That's why Call of Duty is the number one shooter out there, because it feels great to play. In the campaign, apparently, it dips constantly on the PS4, and even in multiplayer at some points it dips as well. So, you know, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a low resolution and a rock-solid frame rate, or high resolution and an unsteady frame rate?
Absolutely. I think we even touched on that before in an earlier pod. Mm. You know, performance has got to be king. I think even in, you know, in single player games, you have plenty of guys on the PC that will, you know, ramp up the settings on Crysis and just sit and admire it for hours. And I think, you know, Joe Public just wants to be able to play the game as well as possible.
Yeah, I'm just exhausted with this resolution gate thing. Like, obviously I'm at the forums, so I've read pretty much every single inane post about this for the last 2 weeks, and it's just a non-story.
I think that's why, you know, I was determined not to bring up the whole PC versus console thing, because people are going to buy consoles if they want consoles, and this is, you know, one of the caveats of that. But as you say, over time, the technology will be utilised, and people will see the kind of performance that hopefully they crave. And but you were standing up for Infinity Ward there. How do you feel about reusing of assets?
Do you mean that scene, the cutscene?
I do mean that scene, yeah.
Do you think that's them reusing it? I look at it as an homage, but...
Well, why don't you fill us in on the story that came out and we can...
I'm not too obviously sure on the story, but basically there's a cutscene at the end of Modern Warfare 2 where one of the characters nearly dies or something. And in the new game, there is a basically frame for frame. In fact, it looks like they've actually used that entire scene and then just redone the assets or something. Because, you know, you're standing over a player taking a knife out of their chest. It's just frame for frame exactly the same thing.
Yeah. It's not the dog, though, is it?
It's not the dog. Oh, Riley. We'll get to Riley later. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of, and the internet jumped on it saying, oh, it's crappy. Again, Infinity Ward, they're lazy and they're using the same stuff and trying to pull the wall over our eyes. But, A, there's no way in this day and age that nobody was going to notice that. And they know that. So, B, I don't really care. I didn't notice when I was playing it. It was only when the internet pointed it out to me. And C, it's probably just one of those, oh, look, people who played the game before might notice that. That's quite a cool thing to do. So, again, this is a problem with all these stories that are coming out now that the next gen's coming out. People are jumping on, like, every small, tiny little detail and just going, oh, my God, look, it's terrible. When...
Yeah, I agree with you. And do you know what? Assets are reused in just about everything, everywhere, all the time, because that is business. You know, you kind of end up taking routes which you've done before naturally, and you work a way of finding out, you know, this worked brilliantly the first time, let's repeat that. You know, that is the way of the world. So it doesn't surprise me. If they were trying to just cut corners, then I think it would be obvious.
But I don't think it's the fact that. I really don't.
Yeah, there is a tie-in between the two scenes.
It's too similar. It is. I mean, if you play them side by side, which there are, the videos are out there on YouTube, it is literally precisely the same scene. Now, it's too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. It's got to be them paying homage to
WWE. What about things like maps and stuff like that? Because there's lots of evidence out there where, you know, maps have clearly been reused and reworked and put into other games. Sometimes it's kind of done as a bit of a throwback, and then sometimes it's done in not such a obvious way. So does that bother you? Is that being cheap? Is that cutting corners?
It depends. It's game by game basis, probably. There are sometimes when I really want those assets to be reused. I'll especially when it comes to multiplayer maps and stuff. If there's a map like Wake Island, for example, Battlefield has been churning that bad boy out since God knows when. But I'll take it every single time. I'll pay for it. I must have bought Wake Island like 5 times because I love that map. But when it comes to them just trying to pad out the content on a disc, say, I think Left 4 Dead was kind of a little bit like that. It's like, does that really need to be a second game, or could that just be DLC or an expansion pack or something like that? I guess that there are some elements of they're taking the mick a little bit and just reusing some assets, but I'm not sure that's the case in this particular instance.
Do you think we always crave reinvention of the wheel all the time? Do you think we're too demanding?
As in, we want them to create like an entire new game every single time.
An entire new game, just do something radically different. You know, is it a little bit much for someone to buy COD Ghosts and go, oh, well, it's just the same as the last one, when that is what Call of Duty is? No?
this is the paradox of Call of Duty at this point. Most Call of Duty fans out there would love them to just go, you know what, cut it off, new engine. We're going to have a new engine, and we're going to sit down, and we're really going to think about this franchise, and we're going to take the best bits from the before, and we're going to add some new stuff in, and it's all going to be new. It's going to look great. It's not going to look like a 7-year-old game anymore. But the problem is that it is one of the biggest franchises that has ever lived. So if they change it, then they run the risk of not bringing in those billion sales or whatever it is they're saying they've sold in a week, which their shareholders kind of want them to do now. So they're in a paradox of not being able to actually change the game for fear of losing people and never been able to try anything new. So I guess I say this in all of the reviews, it's how you approach Call of Duty rather than what Call of Duty is doing, because Call of Duty isn't going to do anything new. It hasn't been doing anything new for the last God knows how long. You need to come into it knowing what you want to get out of it. I like the campaign, and I like fundamentally the gameplay, so I'm happy to buy it.
This whole, like, there's been this whole period of about the last probably 3 weeks or so, and it'll go on until the day they launch, where I can't even read stories anymore.
It's like the run-up to an election, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, yeah. There's nothing except sort of, well, why, it seems the closer it gets to launch, the more kind of bitchy the console war thing becomes. Because there was a period of time where it felt like, oh, actually, maybe people, you know, we've all grown up a bit, you know, since the last round of consoles came out. Generally, the market is older than it used to be. Maybe it's just a slightly more mature audience, but it isn't. It's just, it's idiotic and inane, most of it. And they'll come out and everyone will rip apart any little flaws or uncertainty they can see in anything at all, and then in a year, within 6 months or a year, there'll be a good number of games out for both, loads and loads that are on cross-platform. The exclusives will have come out and either done well or they won't, and we'll kind of just be back into the normal rhythm of conversations about these things, where we can focus on the games again rather than the machines that you play the games on.
I think we're getting close enough now, though, where it's getting it's getting really exciting, like genuinely exciting, not just people posting up stupid things. I mean, did you see the Xbox One demo thing that Yusuf Mendy and Mark Witten did?
I did. It was magic. I know. Magical.
Oh, you got to ruin it. Come on, man. You shot me straight down with that. Yes, he says the word magic too much. But I genuinely enjoyed it.
My wife is doing a master's that involves a part of it is to do with user experience and stuff, and I made her watch it because I thought I was quite. It's the closest I've been to thinking, oh, I might actually buy one of those relatively soon, but I won't.
Yeah, it's what they should have been doing. Like everyone's been going, but why do I want Kinect? But why do I want this? Why are you making me pay so much money for this, Microsoft? They should have done this from the beginning. Just sat down in front of it and gone, look, I can talk to my TV and tell it to watch Babe Station. So,
can you imagine working within Microsoft though, and having like some really great ideas, and just the amount of red tape and bureaucracy you'd have to burst through to get those ideas heard or even acted upon? It must be a really, really difficult situation. You know, the bigger you are, you know, the harder it is to manoeuvre and act quickly and be agile. So,
and is the TV guide even going to be there day one?
No, it's not.
No,
that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, the one guide is basically the US only, isn't it?
What else is going to be missing?
External hard drive space is going to be missing, so you can't use hard drives, which is a big one.
No native MP3 playback on either next gen console.
How does everyone feel about it? Because someone mentioned this to me and said, oh, you know, certain things are not going to play back, and I thought, you know, I'm so far down the road with other devices now that I can't ever see myself using a console to do that anyway. I haven't it for years anyhow.
Here's one of the...
Is that such a big deal?
Is it possible? Because here's something I do loads with the Xbox. I genuinely don't know if it's possible with the Xbox One. With Windows 8 now, you can right-click on a file and say Play 2 and Play to Xbox, and it'll just kind of come up on the screen. Is that still going to be possible?
Don't know. You can...
The One is going to have... Yeah, it's going to be Play 2 compatible. That's
it's
how
nice
it's doing.
Feature, that.
DLNA. Basically, the PS4 is not going to have DLNA day one, but the 360 will, but only via Play 2 devices. So you're okay. Kind of locked into Windows, but still, neither's going to have seems native MP3 playback. So the idea of just plugging in an MP3 player or anything else that you just want a quick custom soundtrack probably isn't going to be possible.
We say that. I used to love that feature where you could actually replace in-game music. Now, that, I suppose, would be a kind of loss if that wasn't in there, because that's kind of a step back, because that was a really great idea.
I still use that now.
I don't know if... That's brilliant. I don't know if you remember me going on about my experience with Mirror's Edge and playing it once through with just the Prodigy's music for the Jilted Generation on loop, and that was brilliant. I loved it. That game is so well suited to that album, but that experience could kind of be gone if that feature's not there.
Well, you can stream it still. You can have it on a Windows PC somewhere and have it shared, and then it will view your share, and you can play it that way. It's just not natively on the device, which is how I do it anyway.
Will it actually play over the in-game soundtrack though? Or will it have to be snapped as the music player whilst you've got, you know, the game playing on a smaller screen?
Well, if they don't do it the way
that's
it is now.
That's the issue,
yeah.
That a lot of, I think, that, you know, the whole idea of a custom soundtrack in-game is that, you know, you replace the in-game music and you don't have any other kind of UI in place.
So you do that quite often, Leon?
I do it every day.
See, I'm the only person I've ever heard of doing that.
No.
Admittedly, it doesn't come up in conversation very often.
I've got to be honest. I know I'm going to damage my credentials. I don't even know how to do that.
What?
Ah, dude, you're missing out.
How do you do it?
You just press the middle button and then select music and then choose your song.
Are you serious?
And off you go, yeah.
Because I think I just have the Vice City radio stations playing over every single game.
I'm intrigued now, Ben. So what are you looking to play, and what are you looking to play it with?
I was thinking I was going to play Batman Arkham Origins multiplayer with sort of Madonna.
What?
Madonna?
Like just 80s, really sort of 80s, just
borderline.
Like the most 80s music. I think I'd have Like a Prayer. I think
Lucky Star.
Lucky Star. And in fact, I think, yeah, just the GTA Vice City soundtrack.
All possible. You could be doing this right now.
Steve, what game would you pair up with what soundtrack?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
One Direction and...
Yeah, something like Call The Wanted, maybe, you know, something like that, yeah.
The Wanted, I don't
know. My idols.
You're stretching my knowledge now already.
Oh, everyone's heard of The Wanted, surely, come on.
The Wanted?
I think this is a cue for some... tumbleweed moment.
No, I don't know how anyone doesn't do that. It's amazing. It's the best feature ever.
Mark, who would you pair up with and what?
Honestly, I've been playing a lot of GTA 5, and whenever I kind of switch to Trevor, I chuck on a little bit of... maybe a bit of Misfits, a bit of Danzig, that kind of thing. And it suits it perfectly.
That's pretty cool. Good. Yeah, very good.
I feel like I've genuinely missed out.
Welcome to this gen, Ben.
2 weeks prior to the next gen launch.
You know, I really should follow the gaming news more closely.
If you play multiplayer, it's kind of essential just to get rid of the people talking. Just play music over the top.
I just turn the sound off.
Oh, and then listen to nothing.
I listen to podcasts a lot.
But I turn the sound off and then have the radio on.
God.
You know, like talk radio.
What, LBC? What, in 1995 or something? Jeez.
BBC Radio 4?
Get the Archers on, yeah?
I quite like listening to Talk Sport while I play games.
Classic FM.
I think you're lost. I
like Talk Sport would make me want to shoot people.
Why would you want to listen to that?
You've got a bit of Paul Collymore and Hawkins and Jacobs, whatever, you know.
Morons,
they have a bit of a chat about the football, see what's what.
Oh, God, kill me now.
I mean, I love football, but I cannot stand any of those guys talking. Stan Collymore's just about bearable.
What?
Anyway.
Yeah. Test match special, that's what you need on.
Oh, God.
In between One Direction tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what would have been funny if they called them New Direction?
Oh, Steve.
Oh. You and your puns.
You've really ramped up these kind of dad jokes.
Wow.
That's a dad joke.
Take that, Steve.
None
taken.
Listen, that comes from a loving place, but you know, I'm just saying it how it is.
So, Leon,
yo,
this week you discovered a little gem that somehow managed to derail this podcast many, many times. I think this must be our third or fourth take now. Cookie Clicker, what is it? How does it work? And where can we find it?
Well, if you just Google Cookie Clicker, it'll be the first thing that comes up. But it is basically... is it a game? I don't know if it's a game. But essentially, there's
it's a
huge... It's a cookie-making simulator. there's a huge cookie on the left-hand side of your screen. And if you click it, it makes another cookie. And every time you click it, you get an extra cookie. And then when you have so many cookies, you might say, buy another cursor who automatically clicks a cookie for you. Therefore, you're making one cookie per second. Oh, golden cookie. Hang on. There we go. And then you can buy things like grandmas and farms and factories, which make cookies at a higher rate, giving you more cookies in a shorter space of time, enabling you to make more cookies overall.
Sorry, I wasn't listening. I'm up to 4,200.
It's one of those games, and I struggle to call it a game, because you're making cookies to make nothing, to waste your time, basically. But for some reason, I don't know why, just getting the maximum amount of clicks per second, or cookies per second even, and being able to buy another alchemy lab to give you even more cookies, just to see that number of cookies you're making per second go up, is for some reason, I don't know, it tickles that part of your brain which makes you think you're accomplishing something. And it's just addictive. It's just simply addictive.
I reckon this is some sort of social experiment.
Oh, it could be.
Someone's pushed down.
I really wondered about that, whether they were collecting data in a kind of Pavlovian way, just to see your response. Like, how long has this person wasted with this tab?
Yeah, exactly. They're all sitting there going, he's still playing it.
Leon's top of the leaderboards globally.
Oh, no, there are people
Leon,
worse
tell
than
them
me.
How many you're up to. What are you up to?
What, cookies in general or cookies per second?
Per second.
Everything.
Per second, it's currently 8,314,671,326.2.
Wow.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
How's that expressed? Can you actually? Because I don't think I'd be able to tell a trillion just by looking at commas and zeros.
I've having played Cookie Clicker for the last 7 days, I can quite easily look at a number and tell you if it's a trillion or a million.
It's education.
It's taught him math skills he didn't have before.
it's edutainment. That's what it is.
Very much so.
Oh, you from the Xbox?
It's magical. Team. It's magical.
That joke right there.
But yeah, I'm up to like 720 trillion cookies.
Blimey.
And counting.
Oh, I can nearly get a shipment.
See, and that's...
Steve, me and you started at the same time, so if it isn't a game, let's make it one. How many are you up to per second?
267.
Seriously? 2.
Yeah.
4,386.
But I imagine all this time...
This is like that time I played Leon on NBA Jam.
Oh, let's not do that.
No, I'm saying...
That's cold. That's cold. But I imagine that all the time that we've been talking, you've just been sitting there clicking... like a maniac.
That's why he didn't bloody say anything for the first 15 minutes of his podcast.
No, I didn't.
He muted his microphone, so I couldn't hear the.
But yeah, it's amazing. It's a good thing to just leave running as well. You know, come back and in the next morning you've got, oh, I've made like 200 million cookies. I can buy myself 40 mines to make my cookies per second go up. And then you realise.
It's got no sound though.
That's a good thing. I can't play it at work then.
What would you pair up with it? What sound? What custom soundtrack?
You'd need something fast. A little bit of Iggy Pop or something.
Cookie
like
Monster
that.
Soundtrack.
Urban Cookie Collective.
Also, can I defend my honour and say that Ben did not kick my ass at NBA Jam?
It was the first lane in particular was one of the most tense, because I don't think I've ever played you competitively at anything online before, is that right? And so we fired up NBA Jam, had a fair amount of trouble even getting to be able to play.
Who suggested it? I mean, that's old school, the oldest
was,
school.
It was organic. I saw Ben playing it and I was like, you know what, I could play some NBA Jam.
Let's do this.
Nah, mate, be honest. What you thought was, you know what? I'm going to die in the show. I'm going to die and kick his ass at him.
Maybe,
yeah.
But then you actually turned out to be pretty good.
The first match we played, I won by 1 point.
And I was up. I was shooting the ball towards the net and the game froze and said game over.
It was just amazing. And then the second one, I was battering you, I think, halfway through. And then in the end, you won by about 6 points.
Yeah, that was a good comeback.
Every 3 points. Anyway, so I think at some point what we should do is we should team up. We should do sort of some sort of two-on-two thing.
We should do.
It sounds like White Men Can't Jump with Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes. who was the actress in it? Oh, Rosie Perez?
God. Rosie Perez.
Yeah. Steve, you want to step up? You could be Rosie.
It's really good fun, though. I love that game.
Just before when we come to finish at some point, before we do, can someone remind me that I just want to say thanks to the guys on the forum that helped me sort my PC out?
Okay.
But I can do it right
now. You want us to remind you to thank someone?
Yeah, because if I forget, I'm gonna be annoyed with myself. So I'm just putting it out there.
It'll come after him.
I'll write it here. Say thanks.
Tell us about your update. I'm interested. How did you upgrade?
Well. What, really? Do you want me to do this now?
Oh, yeah, let's do it now.
All right, so I was sitting around the other day and I was thinking, oh, next gen's coming out. I'm not having any of that at the moment, so maybe I should... Maybe
I want to spend some money.
Maybe I should do something with the PC. And so I thought back to when I first built the thing, and with a lot of help from people on the forum, and one of the things people were saying at the time was, you know, you need to go for SSD solid state for your hard drive, you know that's where the performance difference really is, so which I didn't do at the time because of money. So I thought, all right, I'm going to do it now. So I did a bit of research. I had loads and loads of help from people on the forums who must just think I'm a total idiot, because some of the questions I was asking were pretty basic, I think. But I think it was Ivy Fanboy and Chocks especially were amazing, like talked me through everything that I would need to do. So I picked up the SSD, I put it in the PC, I installed Windows 8 on it at the same time.
You picked it up? You went and collected it from a shop?
No, I bought it from Amazon. But
I was going to say, no, you shouldn't. Yeah, but you shouldn't be buying PC parts in a shop, because
no.
A, you're going to pay more, and B, I don't know where you would even go to do that. Or at least not in my town anyway.
But I've got a PC World down the road, but they...
Well, okay, right there, stop now.
But that's...
There you go.
I've never had customer service like it from anywhere else. It's pretty special. Brilliant. So at the same time, I decided to update to Windows 8 because I don't know if you remember, but when Windows 8 first came out, for a short amount of time, they were offering a £30, I think it was, upgrade, so you could buy a license for it for, you know, relatively cheap.
I remember, yeah.
I bought it at the time, but never used it. So I put in, so I fitted the SSD. I've used my old hard drive as a second drive, and I've installed Windows 8. And honestly, it is so fast, this computer now. It boots up in seconds, and it loads from kind of off to usable within, I don't know, within a few seconds easily. And you click on any application, it just opens, even those crappy, you know, the Office applications, like you can open Word or Excel, or even Spotify, which I've always found to be quite a slow opener. Everything is just super fast, really speedy. I like Windows 8. I've been using it for a while on a laptop anyway. And I'm generally just really delighted with how it's turned out. It was a good little investment.
Windows 8 or 8.1?
8.1 it is, yeah.
I think it's a really important part of modern computing and having a good experience. Just change just your boot drive. I mean, I don't think there's a massive benefit for games. If you play Battlefield or something like that online, then, okay, there's a chance you'll probably be in the map a few seconds before everyone else, but... otherwise, it's just a nice thing to have for everyday computer use.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been, like I say, I've been absolutely delighted with it.
Good stuff. Well, nice to hear everyone was being helpful.
Yeah, they were amazing. Everyone in the PC forums, I love you all.
So, as we just about bid farewell to one generation and welcome in the next, we all looked back on the games of our generation. And, Leon, you've collated them into a little article that's about to go live on the site. We're not going to give too much away.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, so. I was thinking maybe we could talk about ones that didn't go in. Or is that giving too much away?
Yes.
Because then we
just to get it off your chest, is this?
Well, you know, maybe somebody, making any judgments, Stee, perhaps made it happen that Mass Effect wasn't in there, Stee.
Yes, listener, the liberation process was quite a tense and
several keyboards almost, and screens were broken in the process.
Yeah, let's just say there were a few interesting messages in that thread that we were having. But yeah, we by the end of it, we have come up with a list of 10. It should be up, hopefully, by the time this goes up. But we all have something, I think, that has been left out of there due to not everybody agreeing. Because, you know, it's not just a list for each of us, it is a cumulative list for the entire team, so you are going to miss out on a few things. And for me, personally, the big one that's missing off that list is Mass Effect.
Yes.
And I don't see how you cannot say that Mass Effect isn't one of the greatest games of this generation, as far as storytelling. It's just absolutely spectacular, and I'm really gutted that we didn't put it on there. But there we go.
I think that was the most fascinating thing about that whole process, is that we all kind of had to concede a little bit of ground, and a game that we all probably felt that actually we could probably mutually all got together and said, yeah, it deserved to be in there, didn't make it in.
You know what? We ended up, though, to be fair, there were lots of things that didn't obviously make the list, because it has been a great generation for games. But we did kind of end up with a list that we generally agreed on had the best of any given genre. So therefore, you know, we otherwise we would have ended up quite heavy with things like, we would have thrown in quite a few roleplay games have really come on this generation, with Oblivion and Skyrim and Mass Effect.
Fallout.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, it had to be kind of distilled down to which we thought was kind of the best example. Because otherwise we would have had such a lopsided list.
For clarity, do you think we should explain the process and how we reached the highly scientific method?
I'd say keep it secret.
It's not that interesting, to be honest. But it's fair. That's all you need to know. And blood was shed, quite simply.
The point about it was that it took, like you were saying before, Leon, it took a kind of majority decision, didn't it, to let things in there. So there's stuff where you or me or Mark or any of us could feel quite hard done by that it's not in there, but it's just because there wasn't the weight of numbers behind it. I mean, like, someone actually thought that Mortal Kombat should be in the top 10.
All right, we need to stop digging me in the ribs here, guys. Let's be honest, there is no fighting game on that list. There is no fighting game.
And let's be honest, if there was one, it would be Street Fighter 4. So.
And that's true, yeah. But no one suggested that.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, you're missing Infamous.
Well, Infamous should obviously be on there.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think Mark had a bit of a hard time letting go of Heavy Rain.
I had a hard time letting go of Heavy Rain. It's so memorable. I'd still wake up sweating, dreaming about it.
But yeah, it's not a game, is it, though? So, you know, it doesn't go on the list.
Oh, here we go.
Ooh. Harsh, but probably true.
We came good in the end, I think. I think it's decent. I think it's a decent list. And I looked down that list, and aside from a couple titles that I wasn't particularly happy with, I would be...
Were these titles perhaps on the PlayStation 3?
Look, I'm not going to perpetuate this persona that you all seem to be trying to pigeonhole me into. But yes, the PlayStation title should be on there.
good job of that yourself, mate. Mark, you'll be pleased. We got one Wii game in there.
Yes, good. It needed something. You can't have the biggest selling console of a generation not having any game in there.
Oh, you're still wheeling that out.
Yes, I am.
Well, Steve, to be fair, one of us didn't quite go along with the number one on the list, and I really think that you've got a bit to answer for when we can talk about what number one is and why you don't think it should be there.
Do I need to prepare my statement for next month?
I think so.
But after shooting down Mortal Kombat, Mass Effect, and then almost shooting down the number one, I was ready to come down there.
I think everyone shut down Mortal Kombat, but I don't think I were on my own on that.
No, this is true. And when a certain shooter that I am quite enamoured with was in question, yeah, I was bleeding from the nose a little bit.
I stuck up for that one, so...
Yeah, that's good, but, you know.
Which shooter are we talking about here? Mass Effect 2?
Oh, I see what you did there.
My comment about Red Dead Redemption being a bit desolate and a bit too open didn't go down too well.
What's that Ben saying? That's like saying Mass Effect has too much space.
Space in it.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
But I think, you know, and we're not trying to say that this is some sort of definitive list here. You know, it was just a fun exercise to go through and see if we could kind of come to something that we would all agree on. Obviously, our individual list would be massively different, and every reader will have a different list as well, but it's just fun to do.
So, Leon, that article is going to be available fairly soon?
Hopefully, yeah. By the time this comes out, you should be able to read that and let us know if you agree, disagree, or want to kill us.
Ben, you've been playing Batman Arkham Origins this month. Is it any good?
No, I didn't enjoy it at all, in short. So the most interesting thing about Batman Arkham Origins is it's a kind of study in how it is that very minor things that might seem like quite minor attention to detail can be the difference between something being fairly sublime and just being completely awful. So it's not Rocksteady anymore that are developing it. It's Warner Brothers Montreal, I think, but I'm going to need to check that now because I'm completely unprepared for this. Sorry, bear with me a second. Warner Brothers claims Montreal. I was right. I should have just ploughed on. It's not Rocksteady developing it. This claim is a prequel to the other two Arkham claims, but it's not actually an origin story of Batman. It's set a couple of years after he starts fighting crime. If anything, I'd guess it's perhaps an origin story either of the series or of the relationship between Batman and the Joker. There's some fairly interesting ideas in there. At the start, the premise is that it's Christmas Eve. Batman has a bounty put on his head for some $50 million or something. So eight assassins come out of the woodwork to try and kill him and get the money. But the gameplay itself, it's got all of the same bones as the previous two, the same kind of fluid combat system and the stealthy bits and the the detective bits, but the, none of it seems to fit together properly. And there's something about it, it's something I'll try and get into in the review. It almost feels like the world wasn't quite designed right for Batman. So when you're in the city itself and you kind of leap off a building and glide, and you would expect that the kind of distance of your glide would just take you to the next building, you tend to just kind of smack into a wall. Or when you jump and you don't quite get to the ledge that you need to get to, or when you're fighting and suddenly you're in the middle of that kind of really beautiful, almost rhythm game style routine that Batman does, where he leaps about from enemy to enemy, suddenly you take a swing and you hit nothing. It's just thin air. And it's just those little details like that that really undermine everything about it. And over the course of playing the game for the 10 or 12 hours you're with it, it's just cumulative. It builds up, it builds up, it builds up. These tiny, it's like death by a thousand cuts, every now and then punctuated by very serious problems, particularly on the PC, where you get game-breaking glitches. I've been clicked out to desktop a couple of times, which has never happened. Since I've been playing on PC, has literally never happened. I've been quite lucky. It's just a real case study in how to take something that works well anyway and make it not work anymore. It's hugely disappointing. The story at the end has no real kind of... There's nothing there to be particularly memorable, that's particularly memorable or to be particularly interested in. And ultimately, I think it really is not just a bad Batman game. I think it's quite a bad game overall, and I would really say that people think twice before they buy it, especially if you're looking at full price at the moment.
Yeah, I've got to say, they never really captured my imagination, those games. I thought the first one was quite cool and different. I enjoyed it, but I never felt the need to leap into the second one. I feel no desire to go into this one, especially not after that glowing review.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of Arkham Asylum, actually. I think it's one of the best games of the generation myself, and I preferred it to Arkham City, although for me that's really just a matter of taste. I would never take issue with someone saying that they preferred Arkham City. Either way, whichever one of those two you like, or if you like both of them, it's just this isn't in the same, it's not in the same league at all.
Two other massive games came out this month, and they are of course Call of Duty and Battlefield 4. Leon, you've been playing both of these games?
Yep. As always.
So Call of Duty, you're going to do a review on the 360 and then update it for the Xbox One later in the month. But give us your first impressions so far.
Well, I've completed the campaign. As always, I always battle through those in usually the space of a day. Which is pretty much what it is. They've gone as far as they can without changing the engine, which is to say they've given it completely new characters, all new scenarios and everything. They've pretty much wiped the slate clean as much as they could do, but ultimately, underneath it all, it is still Call of Duty. And the multiplayer, I've been playing a lot of that. Again, it's much more of the same, but the subtle tweaks they've been making, I mean, every Call of Duty multiplayer at this point turns into a greatest hits of Call of Duty, where they take out one thing and add another. Last year it was like pick 10 and stuff. This year there's less of a reliance on airstrikes and stuff like that. I mean, they're still there, but I'm really not noticing a strong domination of air superiority or anything like that. And they've added in some stuff like squads, where you level up more than one character at once now, so you have to go through the unlock procedure multiple times, which a lot of people were doing anyway by prestiging up to 10 times and stuff. But now you can do that by creating an AI squad, which you can send off to go and battle other AI squads, or you can play with your AI squad against another person's AI squad, and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm still yet to formulate my final review opinion on it, and the review will be up as soon as possible. But largely, it is what it is, with some nice new changes.
Yeah, the PC version's had its ups and downs, I think. They're patching a lot of the problems, and hopefully that'll all be solved in the next week or so. And I might jump in, because I can't go without picking up a new Call of Duty game. It's kind of like a habit. I'm definitely not going to go on consoles, I think, this time round. But, you know, it's COD. more of the
same. Yeah, and I mean, and that's it. And that's not to say it's not bad. I mean, I've been playing the two of them side by side, and I've been sort of just letting myself gravitate to whichever one I'm in the mood for. And I do honestly tend to go more towards Call of Duty, simply because it's much more of an easier jump in, have 10 minutes of absolute action, and then jump out again, whereas Battlefield is more of a sit down for an hour and play with a group of friends or something like that. They're very different experiences.
So you touched on Battlefield there. You've been playing that on the 360 too?
I have been playing that on the 360. Same again.
How's it work? Is there some kind of scheme where you can buy on the 360 and then upgrade to the one, or is it just buy it twice?
For Call of Duty, there is exactly that. If you buy the digital version off the marketplace for £50, you will then be able to buy the Xbox One version for a discounted price of something like $9.99, I believe, when that comes out. Battlefield, not so much. Game is offering a trade-in where you can trade in the retail version of the 360 copy for £40. They'll give you that trade-in value. So essentially, you will be buying the new version for about a tenner or something like that. And that same system is working on Call of Duty as well.
And, you know, more of the same on Battlefield 4, I guess.
Kind of. Battlefield 4 is a more interesting one for me, because the campaign, I mean, nobody's playing the campaign, let's be honest here.
I never played the campaign on Battlefield 3.
No, but I'm one of these people who really likes campaigns in shooters, and they just keep disappointing me with this campaign. I mean, we've all seen the fishing in Baku gameplay, which is the first level, and it's on with the Annie Lennox song, and we spoke about it on a podcast at some point. We've all seen the fishing in Baku bit of the campaign, which is the first level, and that was really awesome. It had the cool Annie Lennox song in it and everything, and it really was a good chunk of the campaign, and there is nothing like that in the rest of the game. It's much worse, much more linear, much more boring, and much more meh, basically. That's what annoys me with DICE. They could do a good campaign. I really do think they have it in them, and they just choose not to do it. And it's really frustrating. But apart from that, the multiplayer is good. It's still Battlefield. They've launched the same way they've launched every Battlefield game, which is to a storm of bugs and problems, which they will inevitably patch out and improve the game. But as it goes, it's pretty decent. The whole Levolution concept still has a long way to go before it actually sells me on it. I mean, we were talking about...
Yeah, it's good fun. I picked it up, but it's so expensive. Like, I can't remember the last time I spent £54 on a PC game. It's so much money.
Yeah, and then add £40 for premium if you want all the maps and stuff.
It's ridiculous. So bad.
It is pretty crazy. And I'm not sure... I don't know. They've made some interesting changes to it. This Levolution thing, I'm not sure it actually improves the game. I mean, we spoke about the skyscraper coming down in the Shanghai map, which is interesting. But ultimately, when B transforms into the rubble, the visibility is reduced and it's just not an interesting place. They've got several different things like that. Like, one level floods, so you have to use boats or jump on rooftops and stuff. There's one with a hurricane, so targeting's kind of hard. Now, I'm just not sure... I mean, these are all interesting things to do, to change the level, but like, in reality, I find myself going, I wish this hurricane wasn't here right now.
I think this is one of the things of next-gen games, is where you suddenly start trying new things like this. You suddenly realise, wow, we're back at square one of what is going to probably be something very, very cool that we'll, you know, really enjoy in 2-3 years, and it all started here, basically.
Yeah, I think the I've been trying to process it in my brain. I think mainly what I've come out with is that all this sort of stuff is that the level design that they're doing is affecting the gameplay, but it's not improving it, when in reality the gameplay should affect the level design in a way. You know, you should be able to do something to the level which makes it better, not something happens to the level and then it's actually a worse experience to play. Because it looks cool. Oh, look, that boat has crashed into this island. That was cool. But now I can't go where I wanted to go, or there's some sort of detriment to the gameplay which actually makes it worse.
I think we can kind of blow up pillars beneath roads and stuff and kind of swallow up tanks and things like that. You know, that is kind of where it works. It's when it's on a much grander scale that it's, you know, it's not where it needs to be just yet. And hopefully this is kind of a step down that road.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's other weird changes where they've made carbines and DMR rifles across every single class now. So you no longer have the point where, you know, a support person was an LMG or something like that. They can just have an assault rifle now. So, I'm still working on that, but reviews should be incoming shortly.
Are we done?
I think so. Okay, right, let's all stop.
Wait, don't we have to say bye?
Ooh, are you actually going to end it?
Jesus, Steve.
Ah, oh, I could have used an old one. And then been
rehashing just like Activision do.
Go on to iTunes, give us 12 thumbs up or whatever it is they do these days.
There'll be a high five mentioned in there somewhere.
Do you know what? I did go back and listen to some of our old podcasts.
Never do that. Never, ever do that.
We're not improving.
That's not what I wanted to hear.
Really not getting any better. Guys, massive thanks as always for joining me on the AV Forums Gaming Podcast. I have, of course, been Steve Hill. Massive thank you to Mark.
Cheers very much, Steve.
Massive thank you to Leon.
See you all on the Xbox One.
High five to Steve.
High five.
Such a dejected high five. Well, I guess it's a high five.
It sounded like a very limp wristed high five.
Yeah.
And a fist bump to my main man Ben.
Fist bump.
And we will catch you all on the next generation.
Yes! Come on.
See you all next month.
Don't go in there!